Good evening and welcome to City Visions, now in its 20th year on KALW. I'm your host, Joseph Pache. In this hour, we'll be discussing the rollout of San Francisco's bike plan. With legal obstacles cleared, San Francisco is well on its way towards implementing its long-awaited bike plan. In addition to 34 miles of new bike lanes, the plan calls for new bike parking, a regional bike share program, and a variety of educational initiatives that are meant to make biking and riding and pedestrian traffic safer. All this and more to help the city gear up to meet its goal of 20% of trips by bike by 2020. Being hailed as one of the most progressive bike plans in the U.S., San Francisco's vision depends on a transformed streetscape that will allow for the coexistence of cyclists, pedestrians, and motorists. And even bolder plans are in the works, including 100 miles of new bikeways crisscrossing the city. But as what has been a long-standing vision becomes reality, how will the city and its citizens adapt to the necessary changes that are about to come? How will the city resolve tensions between the needs and wants of cyclists on one hand and motorists on the other? And how will the plan address safety violations by cyclists and motorists alike? Is the city poised to become a biking capital on par with Amsterdam or Copenhagen, or do more uphill battles loom? Join us tonight as we talk with our experts here to tell us what you think of our altered streetscapes to come and learn about what future changes are coming to a neighborhood near you. And to do that, I welcome our guests this evening. We have Mike Salaberry, Senior Transportation Engineer with the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency. He manages part of the SFMTA's Livable Streets Division, which oversees the development and implementation of bicycle, pedestrian, and traffic calming projects. Welcome, Mike.
Thanks, Joseph.
And we're also joined by Leah Shaham. She is Executive Director of the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition, a 12,000-member nonprofit advocacy group dedicated to creating safer streets and more livable communities by promoting the bicycle for everyday transportation. Welcome, Leah.
Thanks for having us.
And a little later, we'll hear from Daniel Hurtado. He's Executive Director of the Central Market Community Benefit District, a nonprofit organization that provides programs and services to improve the quality of life experienced in the Central Market Street area. And you can join our conversation by calling 415-841-4134, and we'll open the phones in about 20 minutes. Again, we invite you, our listeners, to tell us what you think about the bike plan by calling 415-841-4134, or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. So, Mike Salaberry with the SFMTA, I wanted to start with you. Why don't you sketch out for us what are the main elements of the bike plan?
Well, the bike plan consists of a number of elements. The most visible element, I would say, is the actual network, the roadway changes that you see out there. You see bicycle lanes going in, sometimes with the posts that separate the bicyclists from traffic. But we also have policies that we want to implement, like more education for cyclists not to ride on the sidewalk, to use lights at night, to also beef up enforcement, to promote the use of bicycling for school children and, you know, bike to school day. So there's a variety of facets associated with the bicycle plan.
So you're talking here about not only infrastructure, but you're talking about how to create policies and a culture that will allow for the safe enjoyment of bicycling as you hope to increase the amount of bicycling that is that happens around the city.
Exactly. We want to use engineering to encourage more cycling, education, enforcement. There's various E's that we call them, encouragement also.
And tell me, what does it take to actually come up with a bike plan? What kinds of issues, I think I may have mentioned some of them in the intro, but what kinds of issues do you have to balance in order to come up with a plan that's viable and that will meet your expected goals?
Well, we do a lot of outreach to the various stakeholders around the city. As you know, there's a lot of people competing for a limited amount of space. And not every street is great for cycling or great for transit or et cetera. So what we do is we work with the various stakeholders around the city, and we try to figure out what is a good network that works for people. And we try to weigh the various trade-offs associated with parking, with transit, pedestrian safety, et cetera. And it's an iterative process where you go back and forth to try to come up with the best plan that maximizes the benefits and minimizes any negative trade-offs that you might have.
And if I'm understanding correctly, the bike plan was first announced in 2005. Is that right?
The last update.
Last update. Yeah. How long has this bike plan actually been? I mean, how long has San Francisco had a bike plan, and how long has the most recent bike plan been sort of out there and for people to kind of consider?
Well, actually, a little trivia is the first bike lane in the city was striped 40 years ago and celebrating its 40th birthday this spring. But the first bike plan itself was in the mid-90s. So the last bike plan that we're discussing right now was an update that we do about every 5 years.
Mm. And what are elements of this particular plan that are different from previous bike plans, either in scope or innovations or in other ways?
Well, this bicycle plan is unique in that we, as a city, had to do an environmental impact report. So we really outlined the, approximately 60 projects to implement. So not only was this a plan, there's also an implementation element to it. So once the environmental impact report was complete, outlining all the various trade-offs associated with these bike facilities, we were actually able to implement it very, very quickly. In fact, we're at a pace now that's higher than ever, probably twice as fast as the city's ever implemented bike facilities, and that's partially because we did have to do this EIR, our environmental impact report. And in general, you're trying to look at enhanced facilities also.
Now, was this EIR a part of the original plan, or was that part of to address the lawsuit that enjoined the bike plan in the first place?
Yes, it was to address the lawsuit.
Hmm. And can you say what the concerns of that lawsuit were, and how were those concerns resolved?
Well, there is one argument was that there's two elements of the plan that were addressed separately, and that the argument was that the should have been treated as one project. So we combined the project, and then also we analyzed the impacts to transit, to parking, to motorists, et cetera.
Hmm. And then at that point, the judge in the case decided that the requirements were met, and it was time to move forward. Is that
yes? As of August of last year.
And any anything getting in your way at this point?
Well, you know, we're always trying to make the projects better. So although we have a project as described, we're trying to minimize impacts to other road users, trying to add more separation between cyclists and motorists so people feel more comfortable. So we're trying to enhance the bikeways as described in the bike plan as much as we can. So I wouldn't say anything is necessarily in our way, but I think we're taking extra steps to make sure that we do some outreach, that if we don't have to remove X number of parking spots and still have a good bike facility, we'll take that approach. So
in anticipation of what kinds of response you might get from people, as what was this idea now becomes reality, and that means it changes people's day-to-day lives or affects them on a day-to-day level. You mentioned parking a couple of times here. I imagine there's some of the plans I've seen is for eliminating parking in certain parts of the city to allow for better flow of bicycle traffic. How are you reaching out to people who, on one hand, might think that the bike plan as an idea makes a lot of sense, but when it comes to the day-to-day that they're going to have to accommodate, that they might find themselves suddenly at odds with something that they thought was such a good idea to begin with?
Well, I think one recent example that turned out fairly well is 17th Street, where the original plan had, many blocks of parking removal. And so hearing from the stakeholders, we modified the plan so that we could still have a good bicycle facility and not have that parking removal. And we're doing that again with another part of 17th Street that's underway. So there's that sort of outreach. And I know the Bicycle Coalition has been really good about putting out door hangers and saying, hey, there's a bicycle project coming through. Here's some more information about it. So we try to do the day-to-day sort of outreach. And we work with various stakeholders to make sure everyone is aware of the changes that are happening.
And that's perfect segue to bring Leah Shaham from the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition into the conversation. I wanted to hear from you about what you think of this bike plan as it currently stands, because I know that the Bicycle Coalition is pushing for even more. But what do you think of it as it stands currently, and what do you see as potential obstacles for its implementation, and how do you see a way forward in keeping the dialogue going that will help to keep the plan from being hung up in court or in other places?
We're really proud of the city's bike plan. A lot of work and energy has been put into it, as Mike mentioned, and San Francisco definitely has, one of the most forward-looking bike plans right now in the nation. We also have one of the highest rates of bicycle ridership in the country for a big city. We know that 7 out of 10 people are biking in the city right now. Now, that may be lawyers, doctors, nurses, dentists, folks who are biking every day to work. It may be people biking to school. And then it may be people who only come out for special events. Maybe it's like Sunday Streets, which was held yesterday in the Mission, or special events in the parks. But we know that people are really having a growing desire to bicycle in the city more. And I think the city's done a really good job. The city departments have done a really good job of making sure that we're adding more and more bikeways and dedicated space. But I think there is a growing demand. And what we're really excited about is thinking about the next generation of bikeways for the next generation of San Franciscans. And I think we're really at a stage where we do need to be investing even more space and energy into making sure that the bikeways are very family friendly. They really are meeting the needs of someone who's 8 years old all the way up to 80 years old.
And I've seen that in some of the literature that I've read. And what is exactly does that mean? How do you accommodate the needs of people from that broad of an age range?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think we've learned a lot from other cities' examples. You know, you mentioned Amsterdam and Copenhagen. A lot of the European cities are doing a great job of making sure that their streets really accommodate people of all ages, all skills, all speeds, because they have often dedicated, physically separated bikeways that are physically separated from the car traffic. And it really means that you're welcoming school-age children out onto those bikeways, and they're riding safely and comfortably, and parents don't need to worry about their safety because there is that dedicated space. We're seeing that more and more in American cities, too. I think New York City deserves a lot of credit for really being one of the first to create dedicated bikeways, even in Manhattan and Brooklyn, you know, very busy, dense, crowded places like that. They are seeing the benefit in creating more family-friendly space on the streets, and people are really flocking to it. What we see is in San Francisco and elsewhere, when you build it, they come. We've seen that everywhere from the Valencia Street bike lanes more than 10 years ago to the brand new Market Street dedicated bikeways, which now have green paint, which is really inviting and noticeable, and physical separation there. We're really seeing more people take to the streets because they do feel safer and they do feel more comfortable.
And so you keep talking about how the dedicated space really is going to invite more people out. The question is, though, in a city that where space is at a premium, no matter where you are, how do you resolve this tension between the space that people have used for other reasons, like parking or driving, and the space that's now being carved out for this plan? How do you educate, and how do you translate what you see as benefits coming down the road for those people who may or may not understand what it might mean to kind of give up some things in order to allow this plan to take hold?
Yeah. I think the city's been really thoughtful about where the bike routes are located. You know, it's not every street. It's very purposefully chosen. Those routes that are very important to connect neighborhoods, to connect business districts, and to connect transit centers. We really want to think, of course, about school areas and important destinations like that. So really thinking, first of all, about it really being a network, just like we have a transit network where you can expect buses to run, and those are chosen very thoughtfully. We really want to make sure the bike routes that are upgraded and that are given that dedicated space are really the best routes. And I think we're really doing a good job of doing that now. And we also want to make sure that, you know, we're talking about the benefits of the bikeways. I think one of the things I've been most impressed with recently is how businesses have really come on board, and employers are so excited about promoting bicycling. A great example is Twitter. Of course, everyone knows Twitter is a big company here in the city and a growing company. We've learned that 25% of Twitter's employees actually arrive by bicycle. It's pretty exciting. And I think we're seeing that more and more in the new economy, for instance, tech economy. We're also seeing it more and more among tourism. You probably notice more and more of the rental bikes with the little bags in front, not just heading over the Golden Gate Bridge and going to Fisherman's Wharf, but also heading down Market Street and heading into the neighborhoods in the central parts of the city. So knowing that tourism is the number one local economic generator in the city, I think it's really exciting to think about how biking can really fit into the tourism booster here in San Francisco.
And this is, I think, a great point to bring in Daniel Hurtado, Executive Director of the Central Market Community Benefit District, a nonprofit organization that provides programs and services to improve the quality of life experienced in the Central Market Street area. So welcome, Daniel.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, and as Leia and Mike have laid out here, it sounds like that in order to get the bike paths to be used, they need to have enough space to invite people to use them. And part of that is removing parking in certain parts of the city. And one of the sort of more recent developments in this area is how there was dedicated space that was set aside in the Central Market area. And so to bring in your perspective as someone who represents the business community in that area, curious how you're seeing the interaction between the bike plan and the business community.
Right. Again, thank you. And in terms of the San Francisco bike plan, I mean, it's been well supported here in Central Market among businesses and merchants and property owners and residents as well. Any opportunity to improve transit accessibility along Central Market Street and Market Street itself is much welcomed. And not only, and in terms of the bike plan, I mean, it's not just about improving access for people who ride bikes along Market Street. I mean, the great thing about the plan is it also is designed to improve accessibility on Market Street and not just for people who ride bikes along Market Street. And we're certainly seeing a lot more people riding bikes along Market Street as a result of the separated green bike pathways that are new to Market Street. And this in itself is helping to not only bring more people into Central Market and along Market Street, but also it brings a sense of well-being, of safety, added safety to the neighborhood. When you're seeing more people along Market Street and in particular Central Market, it definitely adds to, again, the safety and the well-being of the public space. And it brings more eyes and ears to the street, and it's definitely a different experience being able to walk up and down Central Market Street and seeing people on bikes versus, just having drivers in the shell of their vehicles and not being as exposed to, the community along Central Market Street.
Now, was the business community, I mean, not as a whole, but were there elements of the community that in that area that were concerned about the bike presence or the expansion of the bike presence or the removal of parking? I mean, this also comes on the heels of the change in the traffic flow on our Market Street. So curious how some of those questions, if they existed, were resolved and how people are now after this plan has been implemented for several months and the green paths are there, how people actually see the differences or how their concerns may have shifted.
Sure. Well, initially there were concerns from businesses in terms of the ability to receive services and goods from, for example, having delivery trucks deliver products and so forth along Market Street. And that was certainly a concern from businesses and merchants along Central Market Street. But in terms of the corridor, there is, in the downtown area, very limited parking along the corridor itself. So that wasn't so much a concern because, again, there is limited parking along the street. And in terms of, being a benefit to the business community, we're seeing certainly, and we're hearing from merchants and businesses along Market Street that there has been an increase in efficiency along the corridor in terms of deliveries and so forth because of the bike plan, and it's definitely encouraging.
And so what do you anticipate next for the Central Market Street area, and how do you feel like the bike plan is dovetailing with that?
Sure. Well, there is a lot of, new, as Leah mentioned, Twitter has signed a lease to move into the district. And what we're seeing now is in the last couple of years, there's been some significant steps forward in terms of the improvement of Central Market Street, and the bike plan is certainly part of that. We're seeing more foot traffic in the public spaces of the neighborhood. Again, new businesses are opening along Central Market Street. We're seeing a lot more public art in the public space, and there's this a new development projects that have been improved. And really, it's just this renewed momentum and energy that's been building up and in the last couple of years and really moving Central Market Street forward in a positive direction. And I think what we're seeing is, and the bike plan definitely fits in this whole sort of renewed effort to make improvements along Central Market Street and Market Street itself.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us. That was Daniel Hurtado, Executive Director of the Central Market Community Benefit District, a nonprofit organization that provides programs and services to improve the quality of life experienced in the Central Market Street area. And to reintroduce the program, you're listening to City Visions on 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at kalw.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're discussing San Francisco's bike plan with our guests, Mike Salaberry, Senior Transportation Engineer with the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency, and Leah Shaham. She is Executive Director of the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition. And we invite you, our listeners, to call in with your questions or comments at this time. The number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. What do you think about the bike plan and what you've heard about it? What do you think about the changes that need to happen to our streetscapes in order to make our city a more accessible for bikes? And what further changes could be in store for your neighborhood that you've heard about or concerned about or excited about? 415-841-4134. You can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. So, Mike, as we get a few calls coming in, I wanted to get at some of the technical stuff. So what does it actually take to transform a street, particularly busy streets, perhaps, or narrow streets, depending on the street we're talking about, to be more accessible to bikes? We've talked a little bit about actually making the space available, but what does it actually mean? What do you have to do? What do you have to measure? What do you have to account for?
Well, we definitely take an assessment of the, you know, how the street is working as it is. Usually when you have higher speeds, people tend to be more intimidated to bicycle or even walk on the street. So I think there has to be two things. Either bring traffic down to the speed limit, or you have to find some way to separate cyclists from the faster moving traffic.
So how do you do the first?
Well, the first is we can use various traffic calming approaches. If it's like a quiet neighborhood street, we can use things like speed humps or round traffic circles or widen the sidewalks. So there are various traffic calming elements that you can use. On larger, busier streets, there's actually two approaches. One is you can remove the parking like you described, but a more common approach actually is to reallocate the existing street space. And it's something that we call a road diet, where you take out a traffic lane and you replace it with amenities for pedestrians or for bicyclists.
So road diet, I just learned about that term today. What exactly does that mean?
Yeah, a road diet is basically whenever you take out a travel lane and you reallocate the space for bicyclists or pedestrians or streetscape elements. It's something that many cities use, but San Francisco is actually the leader in the number of road diets that we've done. We've done over 40.
Give us some famous examples.
Probably the most famous one is Valencia Street. And that one went in as a trial because people didn't know what to expect. Business community was somewhat divided. But when it went in, people were just like, we got to keep this. This is fantastic. The business community was on board. I think over 90% of respondents to a poll said they wanted to keep it. So that really opened the doors for more road diets because people saw that, hey, this actually works. This is a more efficient use of the roadway space. Mm. Motorists can still drive down the roadway. Cyclists have their space. Traffic is more orderly. It feels more feels safer for pedestrians. So after that, we really started incorporating them into a normal day-to-day basis.
And both you and Daniel just mentioned the term efficiency in terms of traffic flow. And you know, I imagine the first thought many people would have is if you're narrowing the lanes for motor traffic, for motor vehicle traffic, how does that make the the run of traffic more efficient and smoother? Wouldn't that create congestion and, mm-hmm. and delays because people are squeezed into a smaller space?
Right. You would think that, but a lot of times, if you can imagine a roadway, someone wants to turn left, for instance, at an intersection, they often have to stop and wait. So that left lane becomes blocked. So when you have a road diet, what you do is you create a space for those people to wait to make the left turn outside of the regular traffic stream. So you may have two lanes today, but those two lanes don't really function as two lanes at the intersections because one's usually blocked. So we redesign the street in a way where the traffic flows, you know, reasonably well, and you free up another 10, 12 feet of space for pedestrians and bicyclists.
So there's some things that sort of seem counterintuitive
right.
at first, and then when you actually have put them into practice, it looks like things actually work a lot better than people anticipated.
Exactly.
So what are some other innovations or some other technologies that you are reaching for in order to expand the plan across the city?
Well, something that we did recently that's pretty innovative is we retimed traffic signals, again, on Valencia Street, but we're looking at other streets so that if you're a bicyclist going from 14th Street to 26th Street, you can ride at 13 miles an hour, which is a no-sweat pace, and you can hit a green light at every single intersection in both directions. And that's something that we have yet to find any other city that's done that, a two-way, what we call a green wave. You catch a green light in both directions. We're putting in, you'll see it on Market Street also, the green bike boxes. Something to bring it back to the business element is we're putting bicycle parking on the street itself. And what we do is we'll take out usually one car space. And in that one car space, we can get enough parking for 10 or 12 bicycles. And we've done a few of these. And now we're getting more and more businesses asking us to take out car spaces so that we can put in bike spaces. And that's, you know, it's more efficient use of space. And what that does also is free up the sidewalks, which gives more space to pedestrians. So what we're finding is that when we do high-quality projects, people see the results and they want more and more of them. So I think we're on that positive feedback loop where the projects speak for themselves and people want more and more.
So I'm going to take a moment from our conversation right now as we're going to get to a bunch of callers in just a moment. But if and actually, there are no open lines right now. So in case there is, you're waiting to dial in, you're getting a busy signal, I'm going to actually redirect you to KLW.org so you can make a donation as we here at KLW are trying to do something different with this spring membership drive. And we think that the more you listen to our program, like City Visions, like Out in the Bay, like Cross Currents. So many of our local programs that come here to you week in and week out, the more you will understand how much that we value the service that we bring to you, and the more likely we hope that you'll want to get involved and give your support. And that's why right now we're experimenting with a very different way of raising funds to sustain local public radio. Instead of interrupting programming with lengthy pitches for your support, we're keeping our fundraising breaks short and to the point. And that's why at KLW.org, we've posted in-depth information about the station's 70 years on the air, our current budget, and our plans for the future. And we want you to become engaged and informed members of our station and to have the program you value uncut. And you can make it happen. Be the next person to go to KALW.org and make an investment in this public resource that's here for everyone. And I want to thank you for your support. So that's it. It's going to be that short tonight. So back to our programming here on City Visions at 91.7 KLW San Francisco and KLW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and we're discussing tonight our bike plan, San Francisco's bike plan, with Mike Salaberry, Senior Transportation Engineer with the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency, and Leah Shaham, Executive Director of the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition. And 415-841-4134 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation, or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. So let's go to some callers. Let's start with Joanne from San Francisco. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you so much. First, I want to say I'm lived in San Francisco my whole life, and I love KLW. I grew up with no TV, and growing up, I thought KPFA and KLW and things like that were mainstream media, so thank you. And my next thing, I just want to make a comment. I also grew up with no car, and I don't even know how to drive a car. I've taken public transit my whole life. As a matter of fact, growing up, my mom and I would hop on a bus with, like, our sleeping bags and go camping on Mount Tam or something. And my point that I want to make is, as you guys have been discussing, so much of change can be attitude. And am I still there?
Yeah, you are.
Oh, okay. I couldn't hear. It's odd. For some reason, you can't hear feedback. Anyway, What I want to say is, oftentimes, you know, and it is, bicycle riding is not only great on many levels, but one of the things it's a very green, you know, to make a green, healthy environment. And so is public transit. And so often I think that's lost. And I think the Bicycle Coalition, for many reasons, many people can't ride bikes. And I think it would be really great for the Bicycle Coalition to encourage, to be harmonious with mass transit. And it seems to me oftentimes when I'm riding buses, I don't know if it's bicycle riders or bus drivers, it doesn't really matter. But I think it would be really great for the Bicycle Coalition to encourage people to ride buses. More people to ride buses, the fewer cars, better for the
bike. With or without their bikes.
With or without their bikes. And many people can't ride bikes for many reasons. Mm-hmm. But to encourage people to take buses.
Okay, Joanne, I'm going to have you take your answer off the air because we need to open up some lines.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for your call.
KLW, everyone. Thank you.
All right. So let's go to both of you, Mike and Leah. But let's start with you, Leah. What is the San Francisco's bike plan and the San Francisco Bike Coalition's stance on integrating bicycling and public transit?
Yeah, we're very excited that the city has a transit first policy, which means that transit ridership, walking, and riding a bicycle really are prioritized in this city, and that is the policy of the city. And I'm really proud that some of the projects that we've worked on at the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition have had tremendously positive impacts for transit. The one that comes to mind is the most recent improvements on Market Street. Daniel was talking earlier about the changes on Mid-Market, including the required right turns at both 6th Street and 10th Street. And while that has increased both bicycling and walking in that neighborhood, it's also increased transit speed, which is fantastic because, of course, Market Street is our most important transit corridor with a huge majority of buses on it. So it's great to know that folks who are riding transit are moving faster on the street. You know, I'd also point out that, you know, as someone who bicycles, I very much depend on transit, and I think that's common. You know, when it's pouring rain, I'm not ashamed to take the bus. You know, there are days that I'm really excited to jump on the 27 and head to work. So I think there's a lot of, you know, overlap between those of us walking and biking and taking transit. Hmm.
And Mike, what is the SFMTA's approach to getting more bicycles accommodated on the transit system or weaving those two systems together? Because, for example, when I ride on a bus down Market Street in the morning, I often see that oftentimes the buses and the bicyclists are often competing for the same space with each other before you get to that section that's secure and set aside. So how are you working with that tension?
Well, you know, our department is tasked with all modes of transportation. And of course, we're very keen on not slowing down transit. In fact, we want to reduce delay. We want to make it more comfortable for everyone who's using transit. So all of our projects go through a vetting process where we work with the transit experts and the bicycle folks. And some projects that are upcoming where we really try to integrate bicycling and transit use are Cesar Chavez Street, where not only are we going to add bicycle lanes, but we're also going to redesign sidewalks so that buses don't have to pull in and out of traffic to get to access the bus stop.
And also, those are the so-called bulbs,
yes,
right?
Exactly, where you widen the sidewalk at the bus stop. And another project would be a Masonic, where we are going to have a separated space for bicyclists and a transit space for people waiting to get on and off the bus. So as time passes, we're looking at ways to improve the streetscape for everybody, for primarily for transit, for bicyclists, and for pedestrians.
How about increasing it in terms of if someone wants to bike for part of the way and take the transit for part of the way?
Yes.
How about increasing capacity on buses, on light rail, on BART, for example, where you can't take bicycles on during certain hours?
Yeah, that's a tough nut to crack because right now we have racks on all muni buses, which is great, but we're somewhat limited on the capacity there. I think the next step is to explore the idea of allowing bicycles on light rail vehicles, but that has its own issues to work on. But, you know, if you go to a lot of the BART stations, you'll see bike parking in those stations. So sometimes you can take transit for 80% of your trip, and then instead of making a transfer to another bus for last mile, you could jump on a bike and go from there. I know that's very popular with people who take Caltrain, for instance. They take Caltrain into the city, and they ride the last mile in a few minutes, and they're there at work.
415-841-4134. You can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. Let's stay with the transit aspect of this and go to David from San Francisco. Welcome to the program, David.
Hi, thank you for your program tonight. I'm the perfect trifecta of a of your audience tonight. I'm primarily a bike rider. I use public transportation. And secondly, I'm a pedestrian. And I am in the corridor of hate and market and golf, where I think there's a...
Go ahead and speak up, David. We're having a hard time hearing you.
Okay. I think there's a big mistake about ready to happen with the bike lanes that are going to be impacted by the buses that they want to put down Haight Street to perform bus performance time. And you're going to be serving not only buses in two different bus routes into two major bus bike corridors. You're going to be serving less people on less streets by moving Haight Street to two ways. And I don't think it's going to be a performance issue that's going to improve the system. Tomorrow night, there's a SFMTA meeting with regards to this at Cafe Trieste on Market Street. And I urge people to come and listen to see what has to be said. Why is the bike coalition wanting this, even with a bike lane on Page that for a lot of people, they don't take, they take the wiggle, they go up Market Street. You're introducing two lanes of traffic at, you know, for Valencia Corridor and Market Street Corridor. You're too
big. I'm sorry to interrupt you, David. Did you say Haight or Haight?
Haight.
Haight.
The proposal is to bring Haight Street buses to Market and cross at the intersection of Goff, Market, and Haight. And I just think it's totally wrong.
Okay,
so
David, I appreciate your comments, and we're going to get an answer for you off the air for you by Mike. We have to move on to other callers, but thanks for your call. Yeah, Mike.
Sure. This is a transit improvement project. That's the intent. And I do also encourage people to go to this meeting to get more information. Right now, I'll keep it fairly short. The bus has to dogleg over to Page Street to get to Market, and it gets stuck in traffic there. By making Haight Street two-way, the bus goes straight to Market and makes the left there. So I think this has a clear benefit for transit use, which means fewer drivers, hopefully, more people choosing to take transit. But also Page Street is the bicycle route in the area. So now cyclists don't have to jockey with the buses there. So I think it's a win-win. I encourage people to go to that meeting to get more information. But it looks like a very promising project, and... Yeah.
So it seems like, again, no matter how many ways you're approaching this, there's always going to be some people are not going to be happy about the ways that different pieces of the transit system or the transportation network here kind of intersect or don't with each other. 415-841-4134 or feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. Let's go next to Sean from San Francisco. Welcome to the program, Sean.
Hi, I'm actually a member of the Bike Coalition. And I have kids and I drive a car. And I sort of find that somehow there's a false sort of conflict between bikes good, cars bad. You know, anyone who has kids, or many people who have kids, will tell you that having a car in San Francisco makes having kids that much easier. And I think the bike plan seems to take over the housing plan that sort of limits the amount of parking spaces that new developments have, with the assumption once again that, you know, all cars are bad while bikes and public transportation are good. And I think it's once again too simplified. And I think there needs to be an awareness that cars are part of a solution for families to live in San Francisco.
And how would you try to deal with this tension of trying to preserve as many parking spaces, but trying to create the space needed to create safe bike lanes?
I've been biking in the city for over 20 years, and, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with, it's both sides. I think car drivers need to be obviously a lot more aware, and bike drivers just need to be, you know, comfortable and confident as they ride through the city. You can't make it anything completely safe. I was just going down Market Street and seeing all the guys working on those lines. Honestly, this morning I was thinking, wow, you know, the city is spending X hundreds of thousands of dollars on that while many schools are going without or health clinics are closing down. And I'm just, you know, as I said, I ride a bike with my family every weekend. I ride to work all the time. But sometimes it seems the bike bike people are better organized than other people.
Okay. Thanks so much.
You get a disproportionate share sometimes.
Thanks so much, Sean, for your call. So, Leah, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I think it's important to note, just to talk about one point Sean raised, is about the cost. I think one of the greatest benefits of the bicycle projects that the city is installing is their relatively low cost. These are really cost-effective projects that are creating greater accessibility and particularly affordable transportation. You know, thinking about the cost of bicycling versus even transit or owning and maintaining a car, biking is a really important way for folks that may not have other means. And for those of us that are just watching our pocketbooks, in terms of picking the routes, we're really interested in connecting neighborhoods, connecting business districts and transit corridors and such. But of course, this isn't every single street. Again, you know, you're really picking the routes that make the most sense and really investing great bikeways there. We have a plan called Connecting the City, which is really highlighting what we think are very important routes, like the Bay to the Beach route, connecting the Market Street Financial District all the way out to Ocean Beach in the west side. And you're going through, you know, dozens of neighborhoods there, dozens of commercial corridors that really are affecting not only school districts along the way and people's neighborhoods, but also, you know, great business connections.
But let's get back to Sean's point also that, you know, there is this inherent competition, it seems, between bikes and cars, and how he put it, bikes good, cars bad. I don't know. Is that the stance of the Bicycle Coalition?
Absolutely not, no. And I'll say, as someone who's been biking in the city now for about probably 15 years, I'm really feeling less and less tension out there on the streets. I think that's a really encouraging thing, that there is more understanding that most people are just like Sean. Mm. They walk sometimes, they bike sometimes, they drive sometimes, they take public transit sometimes. Most of us do a little bit of everything. And I think it's great, especially to think about those folks with kids. You know, they're going to need to drive sometimes, and they're going to want a bicycle sometimes. And I think through programs like Bike to School Day and Safe Routes to School, we're seeing more and more kids out there on bikes. It's really great to see parents riding with their toddlers in the front of the bike, and, you know, very heartwarming and wonderful. What we really want for people are options. We want accessibility, and you want to be able to choose the option that works best for that trip and to feel safe doing it. And that's really what we're working for.
And Mike, quickly, before we go to another couple of calls here, again, going back to the parking issue, what's the rational approach to decide the number of parking spaces to be eliminated in places of bike lanes or bike parking, the places where you decide to shift the ratio? How do you make sense of that?
Well, it really depends street by street. If there's transit on a particular street and we find that removing a lane may slow down the transit, we're more likely to take out parking. But actually, we're more likely to take out a lane than to take out parking. And we really try to work closely with neighborhood groups, with businesses in the area, with the various stakeholders, because there's no ideology involved here. There is a transit-first policy with the city. But really what we're trying to do, as Leah said, is we want people to have quality choices, that if they choose to drive, that's fine, they can do that. But you should also feel safe walking and bicycling and not feel like your life is in danger. So that's what we're trying to give people, our good transportation choices.
Okay. And let's go next to Raja from San Francisco. Welcome to the program. Thanks for waiting.
Hello, guys. How are you?
Well, thanks.
I'm a cab driver in San Francisco for the last 7 years. And I love bicycle. Hello?
Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah. But the problem I'm facing, because I drive almost 5 days and, you know, night shift, the people does not follow the rules.
When you say people, what do you mean?
The bicyclist. They don't stop at the red light. They don't stop at the stop sign. They're just driving crazy, especially in Mission and Haight area. And the thing, like, most of the time we are facing problem is anytime accident happen, anything happen, is a driver fault, the car driver fault, because it's a big and a small thing and whatever reason. Another thing I want to share, my own experience, is last Friday of the month is a critical mass in the city. And I was working and I had a call to pick up. I went to get the call and this lady is waiting outside from the house to go to the hospital. And I asked her what happened. She said her husband taking a last breath, and like doctor just called, like in very serious condition. Mm-hmm. And when we were driving, there was a critical mess. we were stuck for 40 minutes.
In a critical mass rally?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to tell those people, like, let me go. This lady need a help. You know, she need to go to hospital. But those people were ignorant and not listening at all. I mean, like, drunk and smoked out, you know. So, I mean, like, whoever made this critical mess, you are not, I mean, like, for me, not convincing to drive bicycle ever. You know?
Well, thank you, Raja, for your comments. I really appreciate them. We're going to have to move on, though, and I'm going to get an answer.
Thank you, guys.
You're welcome. Thanks for listening. And Leia, not that you represent critical mass, but to talk about some of the concerns that Raja brings up, and Mike as well, because we want to talk about enforcement of motorists and cyclists, right? Go ahead, Leia.
We're really proud at the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition to offer free urban bicycling workshops. Those are sponsored by the city and held throughout the neighborhoods of the city. These are classes that help folks feel confident and build their skills in bicycling in this city to make sure that they do know the rules of the road and they know their responsibilities. So check out sfbike.org for more information there. And also to focus on the best way to really bring people into bicycling is for folks to kind of show them the ropes. And Bike to Work Day this Thursday is annual Bike to Work Day. It's a great time for new folks to try bicycling. Maybe you're a little nervous. Maybe you've been on a bike in the park or on the weekends and you want to try riding to work. Check out sfbike.org, and it's a great place to find all sorts of safety tips, the rules of the road, and a great way to hook up with others who may be more experienced and help you ride.
My sense is, though, and I'm wondering, it's just like an idea that's popping into my head, given sort of perhaps the streetscape that has not been hospitable to the sharing of the road between bicyclists and motorists, and the tensions that we've talked about that you say, Leah, you've seen less of lately, perhaps that's raised a certain culture of everyone's out there for themselves. And what's it going to take to shift that culture to make people feel more comfortable and not have to be so aggressive in trying to stake their claim in the road? And that's partly to you, Mike, but also I'll follow up on that question with what are parts of the bike plan that are going to address enforcement of proper behavior by both motorists and cyclists?
Right. Well, you make a great point because, you know, not too long ago, what we call the fast and the fearless were the only type of people who'd want to use a bicycle on our streets because there wasn't much space to ride slowly and safely. So I think as we add more safe facilities for people to use and it becomes more mainstream, that people will slow down and I think it will become a much more calm environment. As Leah said, my experience too, I grew up in San Francisco and I've seen a lot of change.
So that biking won't be so much of a political statement. It'll
right.
just be a way to get around.
Right. It's just a way to get around. And what we find when you go to cities that have a lot of cycling, high cycling use, like Amsterdam and Copenhagen, people are riding along in their business outfits, in their dresses, and they're riding around 10 miles an hour and very relaxed. And I think that's what we're aiming for. But speaking to the bicycle plan and how we want to address rule breaking, and I want to note that rule breaking is across the board. It's not just cyclists, it's motorists, even pedestrians stepping out when really they should be waiting for the walking man. It's something, it's a San Francisco culture. It's interesting that people are in some weird rush for some reason. I think we all need to slow down a bit. But in the meantime, we are working with the police department to come up with a more strategic enforcement approach. I think there's very little fear of getting a ticket in San Francisco. A parking ticket's a different story. You're pretty much guaranteed that. But a moving violation, I don't think many people really think that's going to happen. And what I'm seeing and what we're hearing is that the police department is making more of an effort to enforce the rules of the road. Whether you're hurt by a SUV or you're hurt by a gunshot, you're still being hurt. So I think that police department's realizing this is a public health issue. And they're really being more proactive about going out there and enforcing it across the board.
And how about Raja's concerns around how oftentimes the default is that the motorist is the one that's responsible for the accident?
Yeah, that may be the perception. But actually, when we look at the various violations that are handed out, the tickets that are given out, it's 50-50, actually. It's very close to 50-50 cyclists and motorists. So I appreciate motorists who think that, you know, they need to be more careful because they are in a larger vehicle, and that's true. But really, you know, it's based on what we're seeing from citations, it's about 50-50.
And anything, Leah, that you want to say about critical mass?
Thank you for noting that we do not organize it or sponsor it. You know, it's something that happens separately. I think what we're seeing more and more in place of those kinds of events are things like Bike to Work Day and are events like Sunday Streets. And Sunday Streets happened in the Mission yesterday. It was thousands of people on their bicycles, on their skates, so many families. And I think what we're seeing is events like that really help introduce or maybe reintroduce people to bicycling in such a joyful and relaxed way. And I think more and more people are bringing that into their everyday lives. They're saying, wow, you know, I really loved riding on that street on Sunday Streets. I'm going to try biking into work. I'm going to ride to school. And it really is growing and becoming so much more commonplace now. You see so much more diversity out there on the roads.
And let's go to another caller, Elizabeth from San Francisco. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
So I have a couple of comments coming from a country that has a great tradition for bike riding. I think Mike, his name is?
Yes.
Talked about Copenhagen. That's where I'm from. And having lived in San Francisco the last 20 years and really wanting to ride my bike, I have to say that I'm petrified. I have teenage kids, and I am, you know, crossing my fingers every time I let them out, because in spite of those bicycle paths, which I call graffiti, they're like, what does that mean? These pictures of bicycles on the side of the road, nobody pays attention to them. Cars ignore them, and when you come up to an intersection, they disappear. There's no guidelines for bicyclists to what to do, how to behave in an intersection. And to get back to all the people who talk about the great community and cars have a right to be there, too. I'd like to add that, Americans are blissfully benefiting from extremely cheap oil right now, but that's going to change. A lot of people ride their bikes because that is the cheapest way of getting around. And I'd like to hear what you have to say.
And before you go, Elizabeth, for a second there, have you tried those, what do you call those green paths? What do they call?
Well, there are very few of them.
Okay, but when you do those feel better to you or not really?
Well, I mean, here's the problem. Here's my suggestion.
Okay.
The problem I have is that they are very vulnerable, even the green ones, although they feel better because they are noticeable by cars. I drive my kids to school in a car. I'm not opposed to cars, but I think that we have been so, spoiled. We have very, very cheap gas compared to the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm. So
and
about the by those bike lanes, though.
What?
About those bike lanes. Do you feel that those make it safer? You just need more of them?
No. Here's what I think needs to be happening, really. There should be a designated, they're better than the ones that have no paths at all. I would say that. Mm-hmm. But I do think that they should have their own sort of area with some space. The cars that are parked on the right are still getting in and out of their cars,
mm-hmm.
and they're still parking. So when you come on a bike, people are still not used to bikes. And so when they open their car door or pull out, they're not really looking for bikes. They're looking for other cars, and they're not used to looking back to see if there's a bike coming. So it's not safe.
Okay.
So what I would propose...
Yeah, and you're going to have to make it brief because we got to go.
This is a gigantic proposal, but I think it would make sense. But, of course, it would take, like, a complete paradigm shift. But would be to change some of the streets to one-way streets so that you have two lanes going one way and one bike lane. Take out the two-way traffic in many, many streets throughout the city and put a designated bike lane and two designated car lanes and start with that.
Okay. Thank you so much for your comments.
Thank you.
Okay. A quick thought from you, Mike, because I have several emails I want to get to before we have to wrap up.
Sure. No, it's a great point of view, and actually a lot of our city staff have been to cities like Copenhagen to experience what those cities are like. And that's why we're trying out facilities like what you see on Market Street. We have it on Market Street. We have it on Division, Laguna Honda, Portola. So the number of streets where we have this treatment where you don't have motorists crossing in, they are growing. And
about Elizabeth's idea about trying to turn two-way streets into one-way streets?
That's a big one. I think a lot of people would rather have.
But I think the Bike Coalition might want to comment on that.
Yeah.
I think Elizabeth is on to something wonderful. And I would encourage her and others to check out our website, connectingthecity.org, We're working with smart planners and neighborhood folks. We've actually designed out a plan that basically crosstown bike routes for everyone. And like Elizabeth's saying, it's much deeper than just the painted bike lanes. It's actually physically separated space, often swapping the placement of the car parking and the bikeway so that the bikeway is out of that dangerous door zone. And very much like Copenhagen, creating dedicated bike paths basically right next to the sidewalk. So not only is it a great bikeway, but it's safer for pedestrians too.
I want to go to a couple of emails before I have to leave. We have an email from Wendy saying, what does the plan say about paving? The quality of the streets is slowing me down and beating my bike to pieces. The bike path on Cabrillo and the outer Richmond has patches in the asphalt every few feet. Good work, by the way. I love what I see to make bike commuting easier and faster. We also have an email from Aubrey saying, I'm wondering if there will be a program to increase bicycle education along with the influx of bicycle traffic. I'm a San Francisco resident and I bike to work along Market Street several times a week. I've noticed that often riders do not observe common courtesies such as signaling or verbal alerts when they pass other cyclists. While I look forward to an increase in bicycle lanes and bicycle awareness, I'm a little worried about an increase in underexperienced riders in the bike lanes. And finally, an email from Doug. Could you get one of the speakers to discuss the politics and possibility of engineering a bike path to Treasure Island, which would ultimately enable access to the East Bay? Paddling across the Bay Bridge would change the dynamic of the flow of traffic between these densely populated areas. Perhaps to help fund this as a small toll could be collected as a Treasure Island resident, it would also dramatically alter the relationship that the islands have with San Francisco. So we actually only have a couple of minutes left in the program, so I'm going to ask both you, Mike, and you, Leah, some last thoughts about the bike plan moving forward and where people can get more information about it. Why don't we start with you, Mike?
Sure. Well, I'll address some of those comments really quickly. If you see potholes, call 311. Our DPW has been great about repaving bike routes, and Bike Coalition and MTA have been working with them to identify those streets. Bike education, where we have a lot of programs trying to get people to walk their bikes on the sidewalk, to give respect and get respect. And regarding the path to Treasure Island, what's a little known fact is that if that path is built, it will pay for itself in the savings to Caltrans maintenance crews.
And where can people go to find out more information about the San Francisco Bike Plan?
You can go to www.sfmta.com. And if you go to Livable Streets and click on the bicycle section, we'll have a bunch of links to the bike plan.
Great. And Leah, take us out in the last 30 seconds here.
There couldn't be a better time to try bicycling in San Francisco. And I encourage people to think about joining us on Bike to Work Day this Thursday, May 12th. Find out more at sfbike.org.
Great, and that's City Visions for this evening. Our guests tonight were Mike Salaberry of the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency and Leah Shaham, Executive Director of the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition, and we're joined a little earlier by phone by Daniel Hurtado, Executive Director of the Central Market Community Benefit District. Thanks for all of you for joining me this evening.
Thanks for having us.
And for a link to this and other City Visions shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, to download podcasts and sign up for alerts, check out our website at cityvisionsradio.com. Our engineer this evening is Eric Jansen. Tonight's show was produced by Susie Britton. Our senior producer is Judith Sansone, and Neil Freese manages our website. Join my co-host Lauren Meltzer next Monday as we take a look at how Bay Area artists are coming together to help Japan. This is Joseph Pache. Thanks for listening. Good night and have a great week.